So that nasty bit of business is called der Blutharsch in German, or in English, the Bloodharsch. Kind of. It's actually something of a made-up word with a few layers of meaning. Blut is obviously blood, and harsch means harsh, like the vocals. But it has the added connotation of inclement, or difficult to survive, and is also a reference to the crust that develops on top of fallen snow. The implication here being that the snow has crusted over with blood. The album is Alpenpasse by Minenwerfer, an American black metal band whose name translates to mine thrower, a nickname that the soldiers of World War I came up with for trench mortars, which are those wheeled cannons that you always see in like World War I films and television. Minenwerfer is almost surely one of the two most significant bands to have dedicated their entire discography to World War I, the other being the Ukrainian black and death metal outfit 1914, which I will likely play for you very soon. They're both great, but I will offer that I think Minenwerfer did nothing but get better as they went along. Their most recent album, Feuerwalze, or Fire Waltz, is absolutely stunning, and I highly recommend it. The previous album that you just heard, Alpenpasse, is also killer, and refers to the subject of the record, the battles that took place over the Alpine Passes, or as it was called at the time, the White War, which is what I call my family fighting over politics at Thanksgiving. That little side quest in World War I was fought on the border Italy shared with both Germany and Austria-Hungary, which happens to live on a giant fucking mountain range called the Alps. I wonder why Italy put its border on a mountain range. It seems like that would make it harder for Germans to come over into their... that makes a lot of sense, actually. And now all I can hear in my head is the little Swiss mountain climber from The Price is Right. Yep, that's the one. Historically, the game is fairly accurate to the Alpine front, except that in one, the little cardboard yodeler goes off a cliff if you overbid on a set of serving spoons, and in the other, 100,000 people freeze to death. Seriously, 180,000 men died in the White War, and barely a third of those were in combat.
Yo, that's cold, dog.
But before we jump right into one of the worst things that's ever happened, I should probably offer three genuine warnings. Well, two and a half anyway. First of all, if you're a veteran or someone who for any reason has an adverse reaction to the sound of gunfire and or explosions, there are quite a few of them coming up. A lot of the bands that write songs or entire albums about war tend to include the soundscape of war into their soundscape about war. So if you need to pass on this one for mental health reasons, please do. I don't want to traumatize anyone with anything other than my sense of humor. Maybe my German accent. Second, I have described quite a few fucked up things on this podcast, including the death of Sharon Tate, Gary Driscoll, and the relevance of Metallica. Yes, I'm being silly including that, but Gary Driscoll meant a lot to someone. Some of the firsthand accounts from World War I are among the most disturbing things I've ever read. And I've read things written by Sean Hannity. I was young and morbidly curious. How could I have known what darkness lived in this world? I will try to give you a warning before I scoop some pre-workout into your nightmare water, but I also wanted to just let you know at the top. Finally, I'm going to try to move as quickly as I can through 4 years of a multinational geopolitical conflict that some historians spend their entire careers dissecting, but this will be at least a 2, possibly 3 episode arc with what I hope will be a delightful seasoning of clean vocals. But this particular musical spice rack is about 80 to 90% horseradish, or for our purposes, harsh radish. A-T-I-V-E, informative. Just save you dudes a trip to your Dell. Let's just say there are not a lot of power ballads about World War I, but there is some power metal. And I'll try to give those of you who are less inclined toward black and death metal vocals the occasional oasis of melody on which to hang your ears. But again, there's not a ton of it. And you just got 11 episodes of the most gorgeous voice in the whole of heavy metal, so suck it up, Candace. You'll be fine. Okay, I lied. There's a fourth warning. In order to tell the story of World War I through metal, I have to establish the historical setting for World War I, which could feel a bit like history class. Well, a bit more like history class, even than that first part did. But hang with me through the setup, which you ought to be used to by now, because I promise shit will get super brutal real soon. I have some killer music to play for you on this series, and I'm going to do my best to montage us to it as fast as I possibly can. Zang? Zang. So, the first thing we need to know to understand the story of World War I is who fought it. For the purpose of expedience, right now, I'm going to focus on six major powers that were involved in the conflict. On the one side was the German Empire and the dual monarchy of Austria-Hungary, which today is just how the country of Austria lets you know it wants a snack. It's an experiment, everybody. Let's just see where it takes us and try not to judge, okay? Germany and the Austro-Hungarian Empire were collectively known as the Central Powers. On the other side, there were the Allied Powers, which I think is just the name that the winners pick once a world war ends. I would have gone with laser sharks, but Allies is pretty boss, I guess. Anyway, the Allied Powers included France, Russia, England, and eventually the United States, because we had other stuff going on, okay? So in the summer of 1914, Germany was a country cobbled together a little under 50 years earlier through the aggressive diplomacy of its first chancellor, Otto von Bismarck. And if you think his diplomacy was sweet, wait till you taste his donuts. And as the new kid on the European bloc, or NWOBHM, it was somewhat overeager to establish itself in the eyes of its neighbors as a nation with which not to be fucked. The most worrisome of neighbors for the German Empire was Russia, to the east, and their most hated rival to the west, the French. And when you hate the French more than anyone else does, you really hate the French. So Germany is feeling a bit like a guy stuck on a desert island between two other guys who are starting to see visions of him as a giant hot dog. Or bratwurst, I guess.
Was ist this hot dog Amerikanisches are always talking about? Mein Schnauzer ist one cool cucumber.
See? Dramatizing. So Germany started requiring military inscriptions of their population and making a bunch of weapons, including a big old nasty naval fleet. And the English were like, you can't have a navy. We have a navy. Fine. We're putting meat in our pastries from now on. Take that, kraut bastards. But the other thing Germany starts making a bunch of is babies. Their population soars from about 40 million people to around 60 million people in like half a century. And then Russia is like,
you cannot make more babies. We have all the babies. Fine. We put sour cream in pancakes from now on. Take that, kraut bastards.
So surrounded by hostile neighbors to the east and the west, what's a kraut bastard to do but make an agreement with their neighbors to the south, the dual monarchy of Austria-Hungary, who are just raring to go because of all this pancake and pastry talk. And the agreement says if Austria-Hungary goes to war, Germany goes to war on their side, which has got to be hard on the Germans because you know how much they hate going to war. But here's the thing about Austria-Hungary. Their most hated rival is on the border to the south, Serbia, because the Austrians just took a bunch of land from the Serbians, so now they have all of these Slavic people in their country who don't want any part of Austria-Hungary because they just had a really big breakfast and don't have much of an appetite at all. What they do have is a Serbian nationalist terrorist organization called the Black Hand.
See? I told you World War I's metal as fuck.
And when the Black Hand learns that the Archduke of Austria-Hungary, the man who will be emperor, is paying a visit to his conquered Slavic subjects in Sarajevo, they set a plan in motion. Or rather, they have one handed to them.
Because they're the Black Hand.
C-L-E-V-E-R. That's clever. Clever C-L-E-V-E-R. The plan itself was nothing less than the assassination of the Austro-Hungarian Archduke, nephew to the current Emperor Franz Joseph I, and his name was Franz Ferdinand. Nope. 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 Thank you, great song, but nope. Rather than hearing from Franz Ferdinand, let's hear from the Black Hand themselves. Their nefarious plot to murder the future figurehead of Austria-Hungary was given voice in April of 2020
on an album titled Weapons of Tomorrow by the Southern California old-school thrash band Warbringer, with a song called The Black Hand Reaches Out. It's a bit on the nose, but I think they're playing with the over-the-top intensity of early thrash metal on purpose. And the lyrics are kind of cool because they're a poetic interpretation of the historical events. Check this out. End of transmission. Now go on your mission. We don't expect you to survive. And if compromised, take the cyanide. We can't allow your capture alive. And the resolution is my favorite. Mission successful, panic in the streets. Agent terminated with no trace or links. The pawn has served its purpose. Chaos now reigns. We watch the world burn and rise with the flames. Fuck yeah. I mean, no. No, murder is wrong. Fuck yeah. Okay, so here's what Warbringer gets right. The would-be assassins were, indeed, little more than pawns. They were pretty much kids. There were six of them in total, and all under the age of 20 at the time. They wanted to and planned to assassinate the Archduke, but at the time, they were armed with little more than their ambitions. That is until they met a man named Milan Saganovich, an agent of the ultra-secretive militant separatist organization of Serbia, the Black Hand. Saganovich gave each of these teenagers a Browning pistol, a grenade, and if either of those failed, a vial of cyanide. But also if either of those succeeded. Saganovich brought this team of teen titans into the forest outside Sarajevo and taught them all how to shoot, throw grenades, and make cyanide capsules. And one of those kids turned out to be something of a marksman, a 19-year-old former university student named Gavrilo Princep. Most people in 2024 who aren't Serbian have probably never heard the name Gavrilo Princep. But he is arguably the most influential human in the history of the modern world. And here's why. On June 28, 1914, Princep and his 17 and 18-year-old co-conspirators lined up alongside Franz Ferdinand's motorcade route. Hey, why does that sound familiar? Anyway, the Archduke's car was third in line of the motorcade, and the moment it passed the first assassin, nothing happened. Because the kid just couldn't do it. But when Ferdinand's car approached the second assassin, that motherfucker skipped the foreplay altogether and went straight for his grenade, tossing it directly beneath the Archduke's car, where it exploded. But only after a 10-second delay, which meant that the grenade seriously wounded the passengers of the fourth car, the one immediately after the Archduke's. So the motorcade speeds away, transporting Franz Ferdinand and his wife to the town hall where he bravely continued with his itinerary, delivering a terrible speech about pancakes versus pastries that just got absolutely panned by local media. Seriously, up to that point, worst part of his day. So now the plan is fucked. There will be no assassination, no revolution, and these six kids will likely never again be offered a black hand job. He wrote and then recorded himself saying into a microphone. The would-be assassins all dejectedly wander away from the parade route. Having taken their one shot and missed, they dissolve, anonymously, back into the heavily crowded streets of Sarajevo. And I shit you not, this is absolutely true. Gavrilo Princep then decides to walk over to a local deli and buy himself a sandwich.
Hey, got any big plans for the day?
You know, I was thinking about some assassination, and failing that, ham on rye? Meanwhile, the Archduke learns that the occupants of that fourth car are recovering at a hospital in Sarajevo. And after 10 minutes of trying to find someone who knows their names, he settled on a plan to just say big guy and champ a lot, before it's decided that the return route of the motorcade should be scrapped to avoid the city center and instead take Ferdinand and wife directly to the hospital via a new path. But somebody forgets to tell the driver. And on the way to the hospital, the dude makes a turn onto the original route as the rest of the cars continue on the new one, when suddenly everyone starts screaming at the Archduke's driver to stop and turn around. So in an effort to ensure Ferdinand's safety, his driver abruptly stops the car right in front of a local deli. The exact same local deli that Gavrilo Princip went into, and the one he is now standing directly in front of, holding a turkey on rye that he hoped would soak up the disappointments of the day. In what must have happened in slow motion for Princip, the car carrying the Archduke of the Austro-Hungarian Empire and heir to the Habsburg throne, Franz Ferdinand, rolls to a stop directly in front of him, as the driver frantically throws the car into reverse and stalls. So the 19-year-old peasant farm boy from rural Bosnia, who was once studying to be a simple merchant, walks directly up to the royal car, pulls out his Browning pistol, and fires two shots point blank. The first goes through Franz Ferdinand's neck, the second directly into his wife's stomach. Princip then immediately popped his cyanide capsule before being disarmed and wrestled to the ground. But what Warbringer's The Black Hand reaches out gets wrong is that the poison fails to kill him. Gavrilo Princip and his five co-conspirators are arrested, tried, and convicted. But as they were all too young to be executed, they were put into solitary confinement in a military prison in the Czech Republic. And somewhere, Randy Blythe is just staring out a rain-streaked window. Not blinking, but not really seeing either. Now, we zoom out for the big picture. Austria-Hungary blames Serbia for the assassination and immediately wants to declare war. But remember, they have that bro code with Germany. And if the Austro-Hungarian Empire declares war on Serbia, the German Empire also has to declare war on Serbia. Hey, you need a spot, bro? Austria-Hungary, do you even lift, bro? But Serbia has a Slavic country and will likely draw defenders from other Slavic countries. Big ones. Ones that put sour cream in their pancakes. Oh my god, Russia!
Is blini. We feed too many babies.
So if Austria-Hungary goes to war with Serbia, Germany has to go to war with Serbia, which means Russia goes to war with Germany. And if Russia goes to war with Germany, France also has to go to war with Germany, because those two countries had a kind of unspoken bro code over Germany as well.
Hey, Russia, you need a spot, bro? Too bad, I surrender to heavy weights.
And now England is thinking, if Germany takes France, what's to stop them from continuing on to England? They've just built themselves an enormous navy.
I'm beginning to seriously doubt the deterrent effect of those meat pies.
Europe on June 27th, 1914 was like that scene at the end of Reservoir Dogs, where they've all got their guns pointed at one another, all waiting for someone to go first. But on June 28th, before Ferdinand's body is even cold, the Austro-Hungarian Empire pulls their trigger. Now what happens next is a series of war declarations by almost all of those major powers that I promised to focus on when I started telling this story, sending the entire world hurtling into its first global and modern war. Each of the metaphorical triggers necessary for the ignition of the war machine begin firing one on top of the other, tumbling forward in a chain of events going all the way back to a single literal trigger pull on the streets of Sarajevo, June 28, 1914. And the starting date of what became one of the worst accidents in human history was not an accident at all. The Black Hand chose their day of reckoning.
Man, that was such a cool sentence to say.
No, it wasn't. Terrorism is bad.
So fucking cool.
June 28th is a Serbian national holiday dedicated to the remembrance of the martyrs who died in the Battle of Kosovo in 1389. In Serbia, it is known as Vidovdan, or St. Vitus Day. No. No. Again. No. Great song. But no. And that day lends its name to a track from an EP released in 2019 by the German black metal band Temple of Oblivion. The album is third in a trilogy of EPs that tells the story of events leading up to the start of World War I. All three records share the title of Via Falsa, or False Path, but are assigned the sequential years of 1866, 1898, and 1914. The sound of the opening track to Via Falsa 1914 portends the horrors that will follow in the wake of Gavrilo Princip's fateful actions on June 28th of the same year, and is, I think, a fitting soundscape for what awaits the world upon the inception of the war to end all wars. In English, the song title translates to On St. Vitus Day, but Temple of Oblivion opted instead to use the original Serbian phrase, Na Vidovdan. I said on Twitter the other day that a year ago there was nothing I hated more than the retching vocals of black metal. But I'll be damned if that little bleh moment before the riff kicks in on that track doesn't make my tiny evil heart grow three times the size. Who starts falling in love with black metal in their mid-40s? Hi, it's me. I'm the problem. It's me. I also want to assure you that as we move into the next episode, I have done my best due diligence on all the black metal that I will be playing for you, and I'll be playing quite a bit. None of these bands, to the best of my knowledge, and I have researched them, are even adjacent to what is known as NSBM, or National Socialist Black Metal. Yes, National Socialist, as in Nazis. I'm not sure why there are elements of any society in 2024 that want to associate themselves with the philosophies of shit like Nazism or the American Confederacy, but I guess if your thing is being really good at racism and really bad at fighting wars, I could understand. But other than that, I don't really see the upside. Alas, back to 1914. The world is now at war, and all expectations are that it will be brief. In fact, Germany's strategy relies on it. We'll cover that next time. For now, the Earth hovers in limbo between the death of one man, the Archduke Franz Ferdinand, and millions upon millions more. No country went into World War I thinking that it would lead to the utter decimation of their people, because as the old saying goes, generals prepare to fight the last war and not the next one. And nowhere in history, I think, is the gap between the wars of the past and the wars of the future greater than in the lead-up to World War I. And on the next, and Volume for All, I'm going to tell you exactly why, with a little help from my friends, who also happen to make the greatest music in the world, heavy metal.
We're headed to no man's land, mother punchers.
Sorry, no person's land. All are welcome to die pointless deaths on this podcast. On the next, and Volume...
That was World War Wonderful!
Oh, goddammit.
I got us some cafefes!
It looks like it. And it only took you an hour and a half. Record time. What were you doing down there?
Chatting.
Oh, great. So I can never get coffee there again. Where'd you go?
Starbucks.
Okay, right. Which one?
There's another Starbucks?
All right, I'll just quit coffee altogether. How did you get in here, stupid idiot brain? I changed the door code after you left.
I put in my mom's birthday.
It's my mom's birthday. All right, look. You know I love you, right?
I love you too.
Thanks. And you did some great stuff on the subgenre episodes and the heavy metal vocals, but this is World War I. It's kind of a serious subject, and you're like all of my worst comic impulses, so it's not a great fit. You understand?
Yes, totally. No, not at all.
Okay, well, just to demonstrate, I wrote this sentence for the next episode. Listen to this and tell me what you think. World War I did not discriminate when it came to the English. The conflict required the service of the entire nation from knights to nobodies. Now, when you hear that sentence, what's the first thing that comes—
Sir Elton John Doe!
See? That's exactly why I can't have you in here. It's not just a really mid before and after Jeopardy answer, but also I highly doubt that Sir Elton John would appreciate it.
Jeopardy question!
Yes, I understand the premise of Jeopardy. Why does everyone keep doing that?
Sir Michael Kanin fodder!
All right, stupid idiot brain, just get out, please. My coffee is cold. I need a new one. Could you please take 3 hours and just go get it?
Warming up the cafefe!
Yes, please go warm up my coffee. Goodbye.
Bye!
Sorry. Let's return to a more serious treatment of our subject. As I was saying, all are welcome to die pointless deaths on this podcast. On the next...
Dame Judi Trench!
Okay, I like that one. And there's more where that came from on the next and Volume for All.